Welcome to EdTech Weekly, the show that gets you into the week of tech and tries to put a little bit of an educational technology spin on it for you. First off, my name is Ricky Zager. I'm the host of the show, and my compadre with me today is Matt Harrison. Say hello to the people, Matt.
Hello, people.
Very nicely done. I guess since this is the first show, we should probably do a little bit more of an intro. I have been in education for about 10 years. I started out as a bus driver. That's right, you heard it right, bus driver. Then I was a long-term sub, went on to be a teacher, and then got my master's in educational technology, and I've been working with the district for the last year and a half in educational technology as a technology coordinator. And Matt's on the show, well, basically for two reasons. He knows a lot about technology, and he's a good friend of mine, and if I'm going to do a podcast and probably not that many people are going to be listening to it, at least at the beginning, I would like to at least have a good time. Matt is also the creator of twodudestechitout.com. You should check that out. There's some good blogs on there, and it's just starting out. And full disclosure, I'm the other tech dude. So, you know, it's a plug. What can I say?
This is all news to me, Ricky. I really thought that I just had a split personality.
Well, hey, when you have a split personality, you probably think a lot of things that may or not may not be true, but that's not really coherent to what we're talking about right now. So let's get on to our current tech news. In the beginning of each show, we're going to start off with some current tech news that's going on and how it can affect education. And Matt, we would be remiss if we did not mention with This Week in Technology, the Apple Watch going out to a couple days ago for pre-order. What do you think about the Apple Watch, Matt?
Ideally, I think wearable tech is pretty much what we need beyond anything else, and Apple does a great job fit and finish making products that people want to buy. I personally feel like it's, you know, a step in the right direction, kind of getting more people involved in it. I feel like the Pebble was pretty good in itself. There were some flops in the same marketplace with Motorola. But other than that, I think that it's just a great product. I think it is going to give a lot more credence to the available data that everybody sort of shares in a day-to-day lifestyle that can be used in a multitude of different ways. How many steps you take and all that jazz.
I think you're right. And I think what probably the biggest thing when Apple gets involved in something, you just start to see more people get involved. It's talked about more for good or for bad. Apple does set the trends in some ways. I'm not a big fan from what I've seen of the Apple Watch in terms of me wanting it now. I just don't think they're where I need them to be yet. You know, I don't want to have to charge something every day to use it, take it off my wrist, charge it, try to put it back on. That's just not going to work for me. Fitness trackers, wearables, those are all things that are kind of moving forward really quickly right now. But for educational purposes, you know, wearable technology, do you think teachers should be concerned about this sort of thing? Is the Apple Watch going to be the new way for students to cheat?
As far as cheating and stuff like that, I don't know that I necessarily have a whole lot that I can bring to the table.
not a cheater?
not an Apple Watch cheater.
There you go. Well, hey, at least you said it here first. Now the people know. You're not an Apple Watch cheater.
I do think that, you know, it's probably a whole lot easier to look down at your watch and probably not get caught versus pulling something out of your pocket. But I don't know that anybody should be concerned about new technology entering the classroom for that reason and automatically thinking that it's going to be used in that capacity.
Yeah, I mean, you know, students have been cheating since school began. You know, so whatever the first schoolhouse was, wherever the first teacher was, students have been cheating, let's be honest. And they all have phones. I think phones are easier to cheat from because you only need one hand. So if you have an Apple Watch, you've got to be able to move your wrist and your arm to where you can see it. And you've got to be able to use your other hand to scroll through. I mean, it doesn't seem like to me that it's going to be a major cheating situation, more so than any other piece of technology. Well, let's talk a little bit about what could be some of the positive educational impact. I see it as being sort of a way to get notifications or get information. I don't know right off the bat, especially if this iteration is going to be a huge educational impact. Any thoughts on that?
I can't see the first iteration really bringing a whole lot to the table other than making your step or walking or running apps run a bit more smoothly, or maybe integrations with checking out Perspiration and something like that.
Maybe the health classes, maybe that's a place that right off the bat, maybe, you know, being able to share that type of information, maybe that helps with some teachers with health or something like that. But I don't see a major positive or negative necessarily educational impact for the Apple Watch. I'm excited to see where it goes, though.
Well, I'm happier to see something like this sort of grow, because maybe it gives, you know, a kid in the 7th, 8th grade an idea that they can create an app that works for this, that makes something of that. And then you have somebody else who looks at it from, who digs down way deeper and wants to actually learn about the nodes that are being used inside of it and developing their own wearable, you know, technology and finding a way to track something differently. That's something that I really, really love about all of these different innovations is whenever Apple or Motorola or Samsung come out with a new phone, you have a whole new group of people that are going to be exposed to this and are going to find how easy it is to make an app and basically change the way that they look at everyday problems and how they can solve it using one of those newer items, or in some cases, what I did several years ago, grabbing old computers, figuring out how easy it was to throw Linux on them and being able to play with them that way.
Now, slow down with all this. You're getting a little too techie, maybe. I don't know. This Linux talk, this might be a little too much for tech teachers, but I guess we'll allow it. Positive educational impact sounds like, to me, from what you're saying, is exactly that. This is inspiring people, inspiring students to find out more about how things work, how they can change the world. I think that's where this type of technology impacts educationally. It really does. I mean, you're 100% on. Excellent job with that. I think you're right all the way. So let's move on to our next story, and we go from Apple to Google. That's a lot of people might get upset about that, but we're going to do it. We're going to push forward. Engadget's reporting that the Google Art Project has been scanning and adding hundreds of 3D sculptures and animal skulls. Now, Google, like them, hate them, same thing with Apple, right? They get the needle moving towards things happening. And in this case, they're really taking a lot of cool art and other historical artifacts, and for the sake of preservation or maybe just new ways to experience them, are putting them out there. Did you get a chance to take a look at this?
Yes. I thought it was really cool just because they're using their technology to further themselves, but at the same time further our ability to learn, all the different divots and points that may exist in a triceratops. Being able to look at old art and finding, you know, the subtle nuances and brush strokes, I think is absolutely 100% brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. And I spent some time looking at it, and just the detail on some of these 3D objects that you can zoom in on, it's incredible. I mean, it really does sort of look like you're holding the actual object. I mean, it's amazing what some of the scanners and the high quality images and things that they're able to do right now. But for the classroom, this is major cool factor, right? I mean, if you're teaching about, you know, ancient history, and you can show a skull or you can show something else that, and kids can get in there and examine it and look at it from all directions. I mean, as a teacher, I see almost unlimited things you could use this for in the classroom.
Oh, and honestly, the coolest thing in the world to me would be having a 3D printer at your school, being able to print out a skull that looks like this and being able to tangibly touch something that you would have never been able to do if you had just gone to a museum.
Yeah, we're getting into some pretty exciting places in educational technology right now with that. And I noticed someone in the comments of that Engadget article actually mentioned something about 3D printing and would they be giving the designs for that to happen. And I hope that they do, because you're 100% right. If you can actually experience it in that different way, it's going to bring a lot more interest. I would note that it didn't seem 100% simple to get to the Google Art Project from that article. So if you're on a gadget, you see it. But if you just Google the phrase Google Art Project, it's going to take you right there. And the 3D scans are sort of in the featured section. But you could also just type in 3D in the search field, and those are going to come up if you're interested in looking at those after the podcast. So let's move on now. Our final segment for our podcast is the tip of the week. This is where Matt and I, and we're hoping to get some guests in here, are going to kind of talk about something that technology, especially educators, can use or think about as they move forward. Some stuff that maybe they're not thinking about, maybe they are, and just kind of maybe promote discussion on some of these things. And for me, being around teachers and being in this environment, the thing that almost frustrates me more than anything else with a lot of educators is their lack of security when it comes to passwords. I've seen everything from, you know, dog name to birth dates, all that kind of stuff that's, I mean, really just comes down to being a hacker's paradise, doesn't it, Matt?
Yes. And working in the hosting industry, I can tell you I've seen worse passwords, such as password and 123 and just the number one.
Yeah, you know, you see that a lot of times. I'll read articles or see how people say, oh yeah, these are the most common passwords, and I'm thinking to myself, how is it possible that people still use those? But they do. I mean, it happens all the time.
Oh, on a daily basis, our company, the one that I work for, we are constantly having to track all of our track through all of our hosting servers and finding out where exploits exist, because we go in and we, you know, encrypt everything. We try to get everything buttoned up and safe on our side, and then we find out that a web hosting client gets compromised, all because they only have like a 4-character password, and it's not hard to break through that. And
okay, yeah, so we talked about some ways that people are not doing it right. So what can we do suggestion wise? What can we do in terms of making our information, our data more secure? What are some basic things that everyone, even the people who are using password as their password, can do just right off the bat?
There is a site called generatemypassword.com, and it will help you create a 32-digit completely random password. That would be step one, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I've taken to a password manager. I use MSecure, it's called. It's just another step. Is it possible that somebody could hack into your password manager? Absolutely. But for me, I can change my passwords quickly. I can copy and paste into whatever I'm logging into. And it just is it's an extra layer. And there's no way I could tell you what any of my passwords are, because it's just numbers, letters. It's things that make it more difficult for somebody who's just running a program to find that easy access to a password. It takes it longer. I mean, if people are using the most powerful computers, they're going to be able to crack just about any password. Oh. But you try to make it as difficult as possible.
No, they absolutely can. In fact, there are stories where people have just hooked up PS3s in a daisy chain and have been able to use the processing power of PS3s to crack codes and break into people's computers and stuff like that. So
it's I guess what we're saying is it's important to keep up on this stuff, because it's ever increasing, it's changing all the time, and people are finding more easier ways to get into our passwords. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is two-factor authentication. If you don't have it, you need to get it in as many websites or as many different places that you can use it. Because what that's going to do is it sends a text message to your phone, and then you authenticate that way as well as your password. It's just one more step to make it more difficult. And I'm sure there are ways to circumvent that for people as well, but you got to do as much as you can. And I think since this is an education technology podcast, this is something that we should be teaching our students. I mean, even if it's just in a, you know, matter of fact sort of mentioning while we're teaching how, you know, it's important to be thinking about passwords. We're bringing another generation out into this world that isn't really understanding how important it is. And they're even more on the internet than we ever were or are. So I think as a teacher, our responsibility is paramount to make sure we're preaching this. Make sure you're thinking about passwords, making sure you're managing them in a way that makes sense and doing your best to stay secure online.
Well, and if I may interject, two-factor authentication is available for just about everything. If you're using a website like, let's say, a third-party mail.com or something like that, and they don't have second-factor authentication, there are extra programs you can download that will force that to be used before you can utilize it in other areas. WordPress, Drupal, Magento, Joomla all have extensions that can force you and anybody else who's using your site to use our second factor authentication. So
Matt, you're speaking foreign language there. Joomla, I can't hang with you on those things. But what I can say to somebody, if you're not sure what to do, Google two-factor authentication, and you're going to come up with, I believe it's twofactorauthentication.org. It's a website that shows you which sites have two-factor authentication, and Matt's 100% right. Almost everybody has it now, and it's even more so is going that way. So make sure that you are looking at that and trying to do it. Well, look, it's the end of our first show, and I know we can improve, but I feel like it went pretty well. Matt, what do you think?
I felt like it was amazing, and I'm going to pop a bottle of bubbly.
Oh, perfect way to celebrate the first podcast. I love it. So I would like to mention, if you're interested in more tech news tips, follow me at 4TechTeachers on Twitter. If you want to email an app or a website or service that you'd like to suggest for like the tip of the week, you can do that at 4TechTeachers@gmail.com. Anything that teachers might need to know about using for our tip of the week segment as well. We welcome all those suggestions. And also, hey, here's a way to make your show better. But for now, that's it. And I guess we're off to go pop some bubbly.
Woo-woo!